Welcome to Mission Spooky Stanley Cup Special. Today we're going to be talking about the Stanley Cup, I guess.
Which Stanley Cup? The one you drink out of or the one you win?
I was literally going to ask, do you know what the Stanley Cup is?
I know that there's only one, and they pass it from team to team.
I've seen them at Target.
Is that also? Wait, is this the...
Yeah, we're actually doing an episode about traditions and superstitions around the new Stanley Cup that like all the moms have. Like you can buy it at Target for like $50.
It's a cult,
dude.
100%. Anyone who would pay $150 for a Stanley Cup, it's a cult.
But wait, the thing for the hockey is also called Stanley Cup, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm having like a legit seizure trying to like, oh, did I f this up?
No, I'm just being an asshole.
The okay. Stanley Cup from hockey has been around a little bit longer.
Yeah, okay, cool. A little bit.
Just a little bit.
At least 6 months.
The brand Stanley, I mean, we could talk about how yippity people take shit. I almost want to call it like the gentrification of like blue collar things into luxury items.
Real quick, define the word yippity.
People who have never swung a fucking hammer and don't know how to use a drill or a saw or any, like, you've never worked an actual blue-collar job. Whatever it is.
So you meant to use the word yup.
Whatever.
Close.
Look, I'm very passionate about this.
He mixed yuppie and uppity.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I love a good portmanteau. I'm good with that.
I love that. The containers that I used to use because I would run out of water at work are now being bought up by moms who just drive to and fro from soccer practice and put weird flavor packets in it and pretend that they made special water that's not just juice.
Essentially making a big girl Kool-Aid.
It's strawberry water. Bitch, it's juice.
Construction workers and nursing staff also have the same complaint. Although we've moved on from the Stanley at my house because my 8-year-old wanted one because everyone at school had one. And I was like, I don't understand this because when I was in school, it was just about what sneakers you wore. But now it's about what drink cup you have. Are you kidding me?
You mean to tell me it didn't matter when you were in school what cool ass lunchbox you had?
To be fair, when she was in school, they had just invented shoes.
I was gonna say lunch.
It was right after the Great Depression.
Lunch had just been invented.
What did you have? Strawberry shortcake lunchbox?
Me?
I'm guessing. I don't know what the lunchboxes were at your time. Rainbow Bright?
No, that was after my time, man.
Here, you want to feel really old? I ask because strawberry shortcake was what my mother had on her lunchbox.
Oh, so anyway, we should start this actual episode.
Just because I got asked and my ADHD requires me to answer, it would have been like Land of the Lost lunchbox was one of them. And I believe I had an original Star Trek lunchbox, which I wish I still had.
The Land of the Lost had a dinosaur that they just went outside and took a picture of.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Damn it. Thank you so much. Why did I ask you to come on the show? I don't remember.
I don't know. I gave you an out.
I know. You weren't even supposed to be here today. But I said, no, no. JC's like, I don't know anything about hockey. And I said, you don't need to. And Kayla says, I don't need to know anything about hockey. I don't know anything. Well, it's going to be funny because this is dumb shit.
Okay? Here's what you need to know. Sports ball players are superstitious.
And fans are weird.
I went to one hockey game my entire life. It was the Penguins.
I'm sorry.
And I remember eating a chocolate ice cream and watching the ref get punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
He was like breaking stuff up and it was a big old pile.
Bet it was Carey Fraser. I'm going to talk about him today. Welcome to a sports related bonus episode because Cord and I are hockey fans.
Sports.
Hockey is a weird sport for weird people. It is what it is.
Slap the rubber disc.
Yeah, there just isn't anything like it. And the weird stuff that happens during the game may seem very strange to some folks. We've got listeners all over the world. Some of you may play hockey yourselves or attend regularly. I'm looking at you, Sweden. Maybe you're just interested to know if the National Hockey League is as crazy as the Premier League, the ICC, or the Premiership Rugby. Go Sharks. While our respective teams have not made the playoffs, that would be the Philadelphia Flyers for me and the Seattle Kraken for Cord.
Well, my secondary team's Dallas, and they're in, so.
Okay. Good show.
I'm also a Stars fan.
My secondary team is the North Carolina Hurricanes, since I lived there for 20 years, and they are in.
Does Philly have a team?
I just said the Philadelphia Flyers did not make it in, and I swear to God, I think you asked me that again, so I had to say it again. Because we missed it by this much.
Nice. So that's my favorite team, the Philly one. Go
Flyers.
I'm going to
go with the Steamtown Slappers.
Yes.
Is that a real team?
It should be.
I'd love to be a part of the Steamtown Slappers. Their emblem's just a big red hand.
It's kind of like the Uruk-hai in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Steamtown is an actual national park for trains.
I knew Steamtown existed, and that's why
I grew up around Scranton, so.
Scranton.
That's the electric city, not the steam city.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't you ever watched The Office?
Have you never been to the Steamtown Mall to meet Thomas the Train?
I actually have been to Steamtown Mall because there's a goddamn aquarium in there, and it's okay.
Okay, so this year I thought it would be fun to celebrate the start of the playoff season by talking traditions and a few over-the-top superstitions, because to me that falls under spooky.
I don't know if I'd agree, but here we are.
But here we are. You're agreeing because you're being forced to do this. It's in your contract.
Wait, you guys signed
a contract? I've never signed a goddamn contract.
I just showed up one day and stayed.
Unless you remember.
Uh-oh.
I was summoned here.
Yeah, you were summoned. That was different. I had to make a circle. I had to put some mushrooms in the middle of it. It was a whole thing.
We had to do some ritualistic chanting.
So first up, we're going to do some traditions. And those things would be the things that are thrown on the ice.
Puck.
Any American and Canadian hockey fan knows the NHL rules. Section 9, 63.4 of the regulation book states, in the event that objects are thrown on the ice that interfere with the progress of the game, the referee shall blow the whistle and stop the play, and the puck shall be faced off at a face-off spot in the zone nearest to the spot where play is stopped.
And everyone just knows that rule?
Yes. When objects are thrown on the ice during a stoppage in play, including after the scoring of a goal, the referee shall have announced over the public address system that any further occurrences will result in a bench minor penalty being assessed to the home team. Now, the reason I went through the whole thing is because we're going to talk about it later.
The away team fans, do they throw stuff on the ice?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get into that.
I have 6 pages. That bench minor is 2 minutes and must be served by a player who was on the ice at the time of the infraction. If the referee cannot determine who caused the penalty, or in this case, no players actually committed the penalty because it's stuff being thrown on the ice by the fans, then the coach, through the captain, will designate who goes in the box. So fans, throwing shit on the ice is not in the best interest of the home team, because you don't want one of your best players in the penalty box because you had to go and throw, well, what did you throw? Cord, I'm going to give you a test because you're a newer hockey fan.
Yes.
But I'm going to say that most NHL fans if they're listening to this, if I ask you, what are the objects most thrown on the ice during a hockey game? What do you think those top two things are?
In general?
Yes. Objects in hockey that have been thrown on the ice the most over the NHL, since its inception.
Thrown by fans.
Yes.
Educated guess. Honest to goodness, educated guess. I'm going to say,
I'm thinking hot dogs. I'm going with food.
I like JC's answer. I have a whole topic on just food.
Clothing, and if I had to be more specific, hats. But
all right, I'm going to take a guess, and it's only because I only know what people have thrown on stage at concerts I've been to. Bras and or panties? I only go to Rob Zombie.
What I can't believe is that the two people who claim to know nothing about hockey have actually at least answered two things that have been thrown on the ice.
I hope it was hot dogs and panties
together.
Okay, Cord, you got hats for hat tricks. We'll get into that. We're gonna get into that right away. But then the second most thing thrown by fans in the NHL are octopuses.
I'm sorry, what? Where are they getting these octopi
like
from?
Like a live octopus?
They're dead octopuses.
I have actually heard this.
And that is a tradition from one team in particular that winds up causing a whole bunch of other weird-ass traditions to follow. Let's talk about the hats, though, because those are easier to clean up. Ah, the hat trick in hockey. There's also hat tricks in other sports, and it runs the same way, but we're just talking hockey today. So what the heck is that? Why does it happen, and where did it originate? Well, there are different kinds of hat tricks recognized by fans of the NHL. So three of them in particular. There's a bunch of other ones that have grown up around, like the Mario Lemieux hat trick, etc. I'm not talking about any of that shit.
Yeah.
Natural hat trick is where a player scores three consecutive goals in a game with no other player scoring in between. Then the hat trick is where a player scores three goals in a game with other players scoring in between. And then there's the Gordie Howe hat trick, made famous by Gordie Howe, where in a game, a player gets a goal, an assist, and gets in a fight.
That one happens pretty often.
And then there's the Philly hat trick. We like to call it the Dave Schultz hat trick, where you get a major penalty, a fighting major, and a game misconduct all in one game. Yeah, baby.
I like that one.
The brawler hat trick. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. So when a hat trick is done, the top two, the natural hat trick and then the regular hat trick, that's when the hats rain down from the fans onto the ice and they have to be collected by the ice manager.
Commentators always make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
They sit there and scream, it's a hat trick. You got it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It doesn't happen very often, so it's pretty cool.
You have to be real hot that night to get a hat trick legit.
So the phrase hat trick doesn't come from hockey, though. In 1858, during a cricket match, and now about to get extremely UK on your ass. Bowler H.H. Stevenson, playing for an All England squad against a team from Hallam, South Yorkshire, took three consecutive wickets at Hyde Park Cricket Grounds in Sheffield, meaning that he hit the wooden stakes behind the batter three consecutive times. A collection was taken up and used to buy a hat that was presented to Stevenson in recognition of his accomplishments.
I mean, that is an accomplishment. That's
easy. It is.
That's some accuracy.
So, what happens to all those hats, you might ask?
What happens to all those hats?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Cord. Every team has a different policy. My beloved Philadelphia Flyers have been putting hats on display in the concourse at the Wells Fargo Center since it opened up in 1996. Long since full, they've been now adding displays to the ceiling to accommodate the 600-plus hats they sweep up per hat trick.
Fun fact, Rob Zombie just takes all the bras that get thrown on stage and ties them into one big long rope. He brings them out and shows it to people.
Okay.
He uses it to pull a trailer behind a store bus.
Now, each section in the Wells Fargo Center includes a label commemorating the player and the date. In Boston, the Bruins player chooses the hat they like the most, signs it, and that's added to a celebratory wall of hats. The Columbus Blue Jackets, who we've talked about in our episode last year on haunted stadiums, they keep their hats in a large glass bin with a hockey board motif that has the player's name and dates affixed to the outside of it. So they also commemorate them.
They display their hats.
Yeah. And in 2014, the Washington Capitals, who successfully beat my Philadelphia Flyers and are now in the fucking playoffs, I hope they horribly, and installed a display in the concourse.
Whoa!
The Capitals are in? Oh my God.
Yeah, by a thread.
No way.
They say that I go too far with my commentary. Shit.
It was a little harsh.
No, I'm just kidding. I love Alexander Ovechkin.
We make exceptions for hockey?
Let me start again. In 2014, the Washington Capitals installed a display in the concourse of the Capital One Arena, which is essentially a, quote, de facto shrine to Alexander Ovechkin, who's notched 9 of the team's 19 hat tricks since 2008.
Makes sense. He's good.
Yeah. This is where things get a little interesting for me, though, because I didn't think about this until this comment. So the Calgary Flames, though, they throw all the hats away. And Peter Hanlon, the Flames vice president of communications, said this.
You mean they don't burn them?
No. Just like anything else thrown on the ice from the stands, once it hits the ice, we consider it contaminated with sweat and other bodily fluids. Nor do we know where the hat was prior. It would be inappropriate to donate such an item to charity or to collect in a visible area for our fans.
Wimps.
And then I thought, huh, bodily fluids, huh? And then you think about all those, quote, shrines to individual players in some arenas. And I'm like, are we creating magical altars for sports figures with sweaty hats?
My first thought was, has dude never heard of a fucking washing machine? But
well, yeah, there's that too. Yeah, the Calgary Flames are the only ones who throw it away. If you go online, you can find your team and figure out what they do with the hats. A couple teams have been collecting them to put on display at a later date. I know the Hurricanes were one team. Like, they just haven't figured out what the hell to do with them, you know? Yeah, so anyway, hats, man. Easy to clean up. But then that brings us to the octopuses. And for me, this is one of the, like, craziest freaking I mean, it makes sense when you know the story.
Does it?
Mostly during home playoff games, the Detroit Red Wings fans will throw dead octopuses on the ice after the Red Wings score the first goal. This tradition was started by store owners, the Cusimano brothers. They viewed the eight octopus tentacles as representing the eight wins needed to hoist the Stanley Cup during the original six era. Today, you'd have to win 16 games to get to the Stanley Cup.
Right.
So they went 8-0 to win the cup in 1952.
Wow.
So Detroit just clung on to, pun intended, the octopus as the mascot. They went all in. They call their mascot Owl the Octopus. Now, I'm going to talk about a little bit of possible superstition here. So Owl the Octopus, he gets a big, like an inflated looking octopus. He gets hoisted to what was then Joe Louis Arena, right? And then after it was eight games, went to 16, they just put two of them up there, right? And he's named after Al Sobotka, I think is how you say that, the former ice manager of what is now the Little Caesars Arena, where the Red Wings play. He gets fired in 2022 for peeing into a basement drain that went directly into the sewer.
What?
He would have gotten away with it, except one of his coworkers happened to be walking by.
It was the goddamn kids and their dog.
Now, the sad part is that Al spent 50 years of his life working with the Red Wings. He started when he was 17, and he was suffering from major prostate issues. So it was a matter of he was in the arena basement and he didn't think he was bothering anybody or nobody would see him. He's like, I'm having an issue and I'm not making it to the bathroom. This is not good. Oh, well, you know what? The drain's here. It goes directly into the sewer. I just got to do this because I don't want to, you know, make a mess of myself. One individual, a dude, happened to be walking past and saw him taking a whiz. Dude gets in trouble and they fire him. Well, he's now 72 years old and he has filed suit against Red Wings for termination due to age discrimination and not considering his health, you know, yada, yada. Well,
and weirdly enough, the man who reported him suffered an octopus related death.
That would have been funny. Considering all the dead octopuses that this poor dude had to clean up over 50 freaking years of, you know, Red Wings BS.
He becomes an octopus-based supervillain.
Yeah, I swear, right? Some of the fans are now saying that Detroit's not making the playoffs for the eighth consecutive season this year. Thanks to, I just want to say that the Flyers losing to the Washington Capitals is what kicked the Detroit Red Wings out of the playoffs.
Really?
I think that's, yes. I think it's hysterical.
That's funny.
Oh, man. Okay. The whole thing is that Mike Ilitch, the owner, that he's brought some bad luck into the stadium and now his poor leadership choices and firing poor Al because he was just in an emergency situation and had to take a leak. Like, you know how it is. You know how these things are. But people will find any reason to be like, oh, see, they fired Al. And now they fired him in 2022. And now, once again, we haven't made the playoffs.
There really is a lot of like that in sports.
Right. Yeah. And we talked a little bit about that in the curses episode. So Detroit's not the only team that throws animals on the ice, though. And I'd like to say dead animals, but that's not the case either.
Oh, my God.
Because in a video that you all have to go watch at some point, in 1988, a live chicken was hurled onto the ice during a Los Angeles Kings game.
My guess was live pig. I was so close.
That would have been impressive getting that over the barrier.
Right.
A pig?
Can I ask what, like, did the chicken live?
Yes.
Good.
No, they immediately ran it down and beat it with the sticks.
Dude, if it's being thrown into the, like, I mean, they stop pretty goddamn quick, but depending on where they threw it, and they're throwing a chicken, they have wings, but they're throwing it onto ice, it could get injured and die. No, there's still a lot of f***ing hazards, asshat.
No, I'm...
How dare you insult me?
Relax, man. It was a joke.
It was a bad one. I care about chickens. What can I say? I love me some cock.
So do I.
They make all those Air Bud movies, but seriously, they never thought to make The Cluck with the Puck?
Yeah!
Based on a true story.
Somebody get me a pen. I'm f***ing writing this right now. I don't know how to read or write, but I'm writing this.
Trademark it.
Damn it.
It's ours. Get out of here.
Well, it was said first here.
I'm going to make it next to Hell-O-Copter.
Yes.
Instead of Mighty Ducks, it's Mighty Clucks. And then
yeah.
Here we go.
I was really clucked off. Okay, so the hockey game continued for almost, well, more than a minute, really, while the stunned chicken just looked on at all these people racing around it. The man responsible was later arrested.
Good. And he should still be in jail.
Well, it was 1988, so I'm not really sure.
I don't change my stance.
Police Lieutenant Robert Westlake said of the incident, quote, "The chicken was the victim of foul play."
I like that guy.
But just a few months later, the Kings acquired, most will say, is the greatest hockey player of all time, Wayne Gretzky, in an attempt to revitalize their franchise. So perhaps the chicken influenced the greatest trade in NHL history, but Gretzky's presence did not secure them a cup during his tenure.
Because one man does not make a team.
Well, if they got Air Bud, that might have been different.
Would a basketball playing dog do well in hockey?
Have they never made a hockey Air Bud?
They have to
have made a hockey Air Bud.
That was called the Mighty Ducks.
They did baseball. They did football. I'm looking it up.
If there's an Air Bud hockey movie, I'm watching it tonight.
It is.
Really?
It's not with the dog, but it was an air. It's in the same universe. It's called Most Valuable Primate. It's a monkey.
Ah,
or a chimp.
That's adorable.
I want Air Bud. I want a dog with ice skates on.
If I want to watch monkeys playing hockey, I'll just watch the New Jersey Devils.
There was actually going to be an Air Bud hockey movie, and it was canceled in 2024,
because I'd watch it right now.
Probably because dogs don't do well on ice.
What are you talking about?
Oh, they do so well playing baseball.
Yeah, you can have a dog stand in a field. It's hard for a dog to stand and perform on ice.
The dog was batting in that movie, hitting 90 mile an hour balls, man.
Yeah, but the dog can physically stand, and then you can CGI whatever you need to CGI.
You could make the dog stand and then CGI the ice moving around him.
The ice doesn't move. He moves on top of the ice.
We have the technology.
Yeah, but it's gonna be significantly more expensive because it's
Yeah, but it's gonna make all the money back.
No, it's not. I refuse to believe that one Air Bud movie has been profitable.
Oh my god,
I'm ready to argue about stupid shit tonight, guys.
Clearly.
I asked for this.
You literally said he needs to be here.
Yep, I brought this on myself.
You waited an extra hour for me to get here.
I totally did.
I hope you're happy.
My stomach hurts, man.
My stomach hurts. I'm glad we got through that. That's really important stuff.
Yeah.
Went off the rails in a way I did not imagine it would.
Nope. During Game 3 of the 1995 Stanley Cup Finals between the Detroit Red Wings, gotta hate that name.
White Red Wings.
The Detroit Red Wings.
No, Detroit Red Wings. And the New Jersey Devils. Devils fans threw a lobster and a dead fish, because why not?
That's normal.
In 1998, the Nashville Predators were new to the league. They didn't have any history to draw upon. So taking inspiration from the Red Wings, in 2002, they began chucking catfish onto the ice at Bridgestone Arena.
It's so stupid.
I know. I know, it really is. Though not associated with Nashville in particular, catfish is popular in the South, so I guess that's what they were going for.
How are they getting past security?
Ah, I'm glad you asked that question, Kayla.
Is there not an odor?
You can harbor a lot of catfish stuff down your pants if you do it right.
Because it's all seafood related.
So here's the thing, right? If you're working security at a hockey game, are you going to look in the eyes of the person trying to smuggle in a catfish to throw on ice and tell them no? Because they're ready. They're ready to throw fists. They're not scared of shit. Honestly, getting paid $15 an hour, which I assume is what security at events gets paid, I'm just going to say I didn't see shit. It's not a gun. I don't give a f***.
If I was security and I smelled that somebody in the crowd smelled like fish, I'd probably just assume that that person stank.
I could full on see them with a catfish. See the catfish in hand and still not.
You're also probably not the person I would put in charge of security, Jason.
There you go. Yeah.
Is it because I just admitted to letting people through with contraband?
Yes.
Yes. Very blatantly said I would just let them in with dead fish.
I mean, yeah. I still don't know the story of how the live chicken got out there, but at least I now understand how these lobsters and dead fish and something else I'll mention actually get into the hands of the people in the stadium and, you know, get thrown. So here we go. Fans had to go to great lengths to get fish into the stadium. You have to wrap them up. Most of the time, they were strapped to the inner thigh. And when I say strapped, they would take athletic tape and like tape. So the fish is completely wrapped really tight, right, with plastic.
Put in like a Ziploc.
First of all, I will tell you that these catfish, there's no Ziploc bag big enough for these damn catfish. And the other thing I'm about to tell you about, because it gets even more ridiculous. Okay.
It does.
So 2002, we just have really, really big catfish. So they're getting through security by wearing baggy pants and having the fish strapped to their inner thigh. Okay. So they're walking regular. They look normal and everything's fine. During game 4 of the 2007 Stanley Cup Western Conference semifinals, again between the Detroit Red Wings and this time the San Jose Sharks, a Sharks fan threw a 3-foot leopard shark with an octopus sewn into its mouth onto the ice at the HP Pavilion in San Jose after the Sharks scored their first goal with 2 minutes left in the first period. Now, the man who did this was interviewed by locals and put under protection. Right. So he was like blanked out, voice changed kind of thing, because he was afraid that the Sharks would pull his season tickets if they found out who he was. He had smuggled the sharktopus in, again, exactly like I said, wrapping it up really tight, wrapping it around his thigh and donning baggy pants. He claimed that it was super fresh and so there was no smell.
Go straight from the docks to the hockey rink. You know, you keep it on ice the whole time.
Right. And you're sewing that octopus in the mouth like on the way there. So, you know, makes sense. OK, so let's move on to animals thrown, but not real.
All right.
Florida Panthers Scott Mellenby, who used to play for the Flyers, too. He had a run in with a rat in the locker room during the home opener of the 95-96 season.
OK.
Mellenby dispatches the rat, and he goes on to score 2 goals that night in a 4-3 win. His teammate, John Van Beesbrook, calls it a rat trick during a post-game interview.
Instead of hat trick, that's
right.
A play on words.
At the next Panther game, after a Florida goal, a fan tosses a plastic rat onto the ice, and the rest is history. Thousands of plastic rats hit the home ice before the end of the season. The rat trick brought good luck as the Panthers made it to the Stanley Cup final that year, ultimately, though, losing to the Colorado Avalanche. This tradition has since been banned because it was delaying the game too much. Remember that rule that I read at the beginning?
Yep.
That rule is what was put in place because of the rat trick. It was done during the offseason. With goalies having to take cover inside their nets to avoid getting hit by thousands of plastic rats, the NHL instituted the once and done policy, which still allows for hats and octopuses to be thrown once during a game without consequence, but you better not do it again or your home team gets the penalty. If somebody scores a hat trick, I mean, that rarely happens as it is. So sure, throw your hat on the ice, no penalty. We get it. It's tradition. It's cool. The beginning of a game with the Red Wings in the playoffs, if you throw your octopuses, fine, but don't do it again. Rarely has anyone scored 2 hat tricks in one game. The other issue was that they were dropping rats like every single time they scored, which was out of hand. Like, it was ridiculous. And if you go look at the videos, yes, the goalies are like hiding in the freaking net. Next one, during game 1 of the 2010 Western Conference quarterfinals between Detroit Red Wings and the Phoenix Coyotes. The Red Wings score first, and naturally an octopus lands, you know, boom, comes flying out of the stands, lands around the ice. Shortly after, the Coyotes put themselves on the board with a Keith Yandel goal, and a rubber snake was thrown onto the ice. This led to a Twitter hashtag, #ThrowTheSnake. Which was quickly picked up by the Phoenix Coyotes, who issued a statement to fans saying, "Don't throw rubber or live snakes on the ice, please, or you will be ejected from the arena." I like how they had to make sure they said "or live snakes." And lastly, if you're a Kraken's fan,
ayo, I know what's coming up now.
Then you know that when your team wins on home ice, the 3 stars of the game, which for those of you who don't know, there's 3 players who will be considered to have contributed the most during that particular game. They'll be stars 1, 2, and 3. They get to toss a stuffed animal salmon into the stands. And I think this is awesome. I love this tradition. It is called yeeting the fish. And what's even cooler is since the Kraken, like they're very, like, you know, Seattle is very connected to the salmon industry, they change the type of salmon per season. So for this year, it was the coho salmon. Last year was the sockeye salmon. And the inaugural year was the bright pink salmon. And that's literally a stuffed animal that gets thrown into the stands to be caught by fans. So I like that. That's cool.
All very good salmon.
Right? All salmon is good. Yummy. Now, you guys had guessed that food gets thrown onto the ice, and you're correct. Former Ottawa Senators goalie Andrew Hammond was nicknamed the Hamburglar when he went on an incredible streak of 21-2 to push his team into the playoffs. That's 20 wins, one loss, two ties. He earns this moniker, and the fans decide that they're going to honor the 27-year-old goaltender by throwing hamburgers onto the ice. Though he never took a bite of one, his teammate Curtis Lazar did, saying, "I was hungry."
Come on, dude.
And later he tweeted, "I could have used some ketchup." The hot dog incident was 2013, and that was a contest between the Boston Bruins and the Jersey Devils. A fan tossed a hot dog at Tyler Seguin as he was taking his turn in a shootout. The hot dog caused the shootout attempt to be called dead, basically, and the referee let him do it over again. He scored the second time around, and the Bruins ultimately won the game. And then in 2006, during the Stanley Cup playoffs, during the opening round series between the Red Wings and this time the Edmonton Oilers, an Edmonton radio host suggested that they throw Alberta beef on the ice before the game.
That's very specific.
It is, because it's Alberta, Canada, and they're known for their beef. And so Oilers fans continue throwing steaks even at away games, resulting in several arrests at away cities.
Fair.
And lastly, I just gonna mention a few of the best objects, the most epic things to be thrown on the ice. So sometimes jerseys get thrown by the fans. And unfortunately, this happened at the end of the Flyers' late season collapse this year when they were visiting Montreal and the Canadiens absolutely crushed us, resulting in a Flyers fan in the stands throwing their jersey onto the Bell Center ice. And they were so angry.
That's a really expensive decision to make.
It is. It is. And I'm sure they probably asked for it back later because, you know, we wound up, you know,
$250 shirt.
Possibly. Yeah. Unless it's a knockoff. Maybe that's why you did it.
Yeah. If you're buying it legit, that's a $250.
Yeah.
Shirt.
Oh, yeah. No, I would never throw my jerseys away. I'm sorry.
Not on your life.
No. I've spent way too much money on them things. This one's hysterical. Sticks thrown, but not just any stick and not just at anyone. That referee I mentioned earlier, Kerry Fraser, he was infamous for making like really terrible calls. And in 1991, he had a series of bad calls against the LA Kings, which sent Tom Webster, their coach, pretty much off the deep end. Webster picks up a stick from behind the bench and he threw it javelin style right at Fraser. The Kings were fined $10,000 and Webster was handed a 12-game suspension.
12 games, that hurts.
Yeah, 12-game suspension for the coach. So that recently happened to our coach of the Flyers, John Tortorella. He got 2-game suspension, which meant that he cannot even come near the freaking arena. Your two assistant coaches have to take over for you. So 12 games, that's a lot. Robbie Fatorik played in 334 NHL games, but it's his time as a coach for the Jersey Devils that he's really known for. And this is one that I suggest if you're a hockey fan, you go back and you watch this. Jay Pandolfo of the Devils is trying to race to get the puck to nullify what's called an icing. If you know, you know. He face plants into the boards, obviously very injured, gushing blood. The ref does not call the play dead, which that's a whole other problem this year, too, of injured players not having the play called dead. And it goes on. But this was pretty bad because the Red Wings went and took possession and scored. It was Martin Brodeur was in net at the time. And he was like, I just figured they were going to call the play dead because obviously Pandolfo was bleeding all over the fucking ice. Like, you know,
they didn't like challenge that.
Yeah, this is before challenges were even allowed. Challenging a goal, for example, is brand new.
See, I didn't know.
So Fatorik, the coach, he completely loses it and picks up a bench, a player bench that's not nailed down, and he throws it onto the ice.
Oh my god.
He was ejected from the game and suspended for one game for throwing an entire bench.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Poor Pandolfo needed 84 stitches, so that's how serious he was injured. Yeah. Okay, so 2008, we got the Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia Flyers. Hell yeah. And the score is tied. goes into overtime. The Flyers look like they've got the game-winning goal, but then the goal is reviewed and called back. And a Flyers fan decides that they're pretty pissed off about it, and they throw a smoke bomb onto the New Jersey Devils.
Ninja technique. Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of cool. The video shows a Flyer like skating through it. Like the play is already dead, but he's like skating through the, you know, the smoke, and it looks pretty cool. But anyway.
That's funny. That's...
You think that's where it ends, right? Because that's funny enough, but the Flyers fan throws a smoke bomb onto the Devil's ice, and it slides across and lands right next to backup goaltender. When the Flyers arena announcer, good old Lou Nolan, he's asked the fans, can you please point out the person who threw the bomb for obvious safety reasons? The Flyers fans immediately pointed to an innocent man wearing a Jersey Devils shirt because Philly don't raise no snitches.
Oh my God. It was that bag in the Devils jersey.
He did it! And that brings me to the last one, and one of my favorite ones, and Kayla got this one. After the Sharks' Jeff Cowan netted his second goal during a Tampa Bay Lightning game, an excited fan threw her bra onto the ice.
Woo!
Jeff was later dubbed Cowan the Brabarian.
Dear Lord.
That's beautiful.
Responses from fellow players that night were, quote, it must have been a nice goal, and quote, I like to see that. The game needs more of that. Now, besides throwing things, we have touching things, or shall I say, don't touch or hoist the trophies leading up to the Stanley Cup. Cord, do you know about this tradition?
Kinda. I've heard it referenced, but I don't really know too much.
All right. So you've got two conference trophies that teams will win before facing off against each other in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's the Clarence Campbell Bowl for the West and the Prince of Wales Trophy for the East, because we're special. I just love that. I love that the East has like the hoity frou-frou trophy. The Prince of Wales. Players feel that the Stanley Cup is the true championship trophy, and so the only one to be hoisted or touched should be that one. The superstition, however, holds no water, because over the years, both the Campbell Bowl and the Prince of Wales trophy have been touched and hoisted by several different captains over the years. And what we find out is that there's a 50% chance of winning, regardless of whether or not you touch the damn thing or not. Conference trophies, not so spooky, but the curse of the President's Trophy, that's real.
El Presidente.
The President's Trophy is awarded to the team with the best regular season record, which also gives them home ice advantage for the entire playoffs. They earned it, right? This year, that's the New York Rangers. Starting this week, they hope to break the curse that jinxes its holders to playoff failure. And this curse is not a joke, as it's been a decade since a President's Trophy winning team, the 2013 Chicago Blackhawks, went on to win that year's Stanley Cup. As a matter of fact, since the President's Trophy inception in 1986, only 8 teams have ever won the Stanley Cup, having also won the President's Trophy. 8 teams have been kicked out of the playoffs in the first round, and 3 teams have lost in the Cup Finals since 1986.
Only 8. Wow.
But like, isn't that like 20%?
What's your point?
That's a decent percentage of like,
in sports, home field advantage is supposed to be a big thing that matters, right? A lot.
I mean, I guess.
This is also every single team who wins this trophy is going into the Stanley Cup as the top seed team.
Yep.
As in the team that is most likely to win.
Right.
Yeah. So then every other coach and team is watching all their plays and planning accordingly.
But you do that all season anyway.
Yes, JC, this is how sports works.
Yeah, that's how sports works.
This doesn't seem weird to me. How many Super Bowl people win from like 1 year to the next?
If you're the top seed, you start against the worst team in the tournament.
Yeah.
So like you're going against the teams who are like the least likely, at least the ones in the tournament, to beat you. Like, obviously, if you're in the playoffs, you are a competent team, right? But when you seed it that way, like, it means that as the number one seed, you have the highest chance of winning statistically, whereas the lowest seed would have the lowest statistical chance of winning because they're going against the best team.
So I just gave you the fact that the other trophy means nothing. Touching it or not touching it. Sidney Crosby is a perfect example of this. Sidney touched the Prince of Wales trophy, didn't touch it the first year the Penguins went to the Cup and they lost. He said, "Fuck it, I'm hoisting it the next year because we deserve it. It's a conference title. We won it." He hoists it the next year. They freaking win. And it's not just him. That's just a really good example of how it's, and 50-50 if you're going to win the Stanley Cup at all. Like, that's just kind of how you look at it, because you're looking at the two best teams from each conference. But the fact that only 8 teams have ever won and also won the President's Trophy is kind of funny. And it's been 10 years since anyone won this particular trophy and also won the Stanley Cup. So everybody is looking at the New York Rangers to sort of end this curse, if you will, you know?
It's not like statistically astounding. It's just like those numbers should be way different.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of like when you watch a horse win the Kentucky Derby and then you're kind of waiting to see if he gets the Triple Crown.
Kinda, yeah.
A little bit.
This is the only sport I know. That's as far as I can go.
If the horse wins one, you're going to expect him to at least do well in the other two.
Yeah, do well. But that's why that doesn't happen that often, because the problem with the Triple Crown is that you've got other horses coming in. They might not have raced against them in the Kentucky Derby that they would race against them in the Preakness or the other one.
Belmont.
Thank you. So to me, like when you get a Triple Crown winner, that's like super fucking awesome, because it just, the odds are not in your favor to ever have that happen. And just the last thing that I want to talk about is that we say superstitions in general, and that there is this like relative idea that all players of sports are superstitious in some way, right?
Yeah.
Hockey goalies, though, are out there. There's a couple of them that have what we consider to be excessive rituals. And one of them that we know for sure, because here's the other thing. Hockey goalies are superstitious about superstitions, and they don't always come forward and tell anybody what their superstition is, like what they do before game, unless they're like retired.
Yeah.
In this case, we got Ron Tugnutt. Love that last name.
That's a good name.
That's what I call JC. You doing okay over there, Tugnutt?
Sometimes it's just something as specific as like playing music, you know, no big deal. Have a playlist in mind. But then not Ron, though. Ron's like, he's got to do all of these things in this order. A figure eight has to be traced inside the crease. He makes abrupt turn into a crouch, stops 20 feet from the crease, leaps out of a squat, taps all of his pads, hops on one foot, then the other, and tilts his head, and then raises a stick and rubs the taped blade.
When you start watching hockey, it's really easy to notice that goalies do this all the fucking time.
They have the most elaborate, ridiculous things.
I noticed it watching the one Phantoms game. The goalie would come out, he'd go to the one face-off corner, touch the blue line right at the end of the where the wall meets it. Then he'd go over to the goal, and he'd do this little shuffle thing to scrape all the ice up in the blue circle. And then he'd like do the tap tap on each arm and then get down into position every single time he got over to the goal.
I mean, realistically, I would imagine the one player who would have like this weird, almost religious ritual would be the one who is the most likely to get hit with a friggin' puck that will absolutely murder them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, logically that all checks out. Yeah.
We as fans often talk about the hockey gods shining down upon us one night and maybe not so much the next. We also talk a lot about the goalposts. Are the goalposts your friend tonight or are they not? I know of two goaltenders who have engaged in full-blown conversations with their goalposts before a game. I believe one of those is Mike Vernon. I heard that. I couldn't back that up, but I'm pretty sure I heard that Mike Vernon had done that. And of course, the great Patrick Waugh. Patrick also would not skate over the blue lines. He had to step over them as if they were lava.
I could see that. Totally. I understand that. I still don't step on cracks on the sidewalk if I can help it. So I get that.
Eddie Belfour was known about being extremely possessive of his gear. Do not touch. He literally said at one point to someone, and I quote, "You touch my stuff, I'll kill you."
Boundaries. It's good to have clear expectations, you know?
I don't let people touch my dice. Well, I didn't for the longest time. Then I had kids. Now I have no dice.
Right.
He's right to not let people touch his stuff.
Exactly.
I feel that one.
I like this one. Bill Ranford. This was during the game. because it don't always happen like before the game or even after. Sometimes it's just little shit during the game. He could not hand the puck directly to a referee until after he had flipped it into the air and caught it on the back of his glove.
Yeah, I see guys do that all the time too.
And that's the other thing too. You'll see a little bit of like, okay, for example, I'll give you two of our goaltenders from Philadelphia. So first of all, Pelle Lindbergh, my favorite goaltender of all time. He was the goalie when I was a kid. He unfortunately died in a car accident. Tragic, because he was going to be like the best goalie ever. He had an orange shirt that he would wear during every game. If it got torn, he had to sew it. The possibly unfortunate part is that since it was a lucky shirt, he also refused to wash it.
Standard.
Right? So he had to wear that underneath his actual uniform every night. But he was one of the best goalies we ever had until he died. So, you know. And then Ron Hextall, our other really super famous goalie, who was the first goaltender to score a goal in the opposing net, just FYI. He would bat both of his goalposts with his stick. Boom, 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 right before a game. Many other goaltenders do this now as kind of like just a lucky thing to do. I love this dude. This guy was Gillies Gratton, or Gratoony the Loony, they used to call him. He genuinely believed that he had memories from a past life, and that he claimed that the reason he was a goalie in this life was to pay for all the sins of his previous lives.
Oh my lord. I must take this punishment.
One of the past lives he claimed to have was as a Spanish soldier during the Inquisition, who was run through with a spear, which is an explanation he gave for abdominal pain that he had. Another previous life, he claims that he was an executioner who stoned people to death.
Oh my God.
And that's why he had developed a fear of the puck, as he began to dodge them instead of actually blocking them.
Where did he come to this conclusion?
It is what it is, you know? Like, there's some spooky shit in here. There's a goalie who thinks he's living his past lives. And then one that's just kind of so weird. Glenn Hall claimed that he used to make himself throw up before every single game and then drink a glass of orange juice right afterwards.
Ew. I could see that. No, I get that.
I understand that as a performance anxiety thing, because I used to get like super nervous when I had to go up on stage and sing, but then I was okay like once I got out there. But if you'd given me the choice to vomit privately, I probably would have taken it, you know? Just get it all out.
Yeah.
You know? Not goalie related, but I know Sidney Crosby is a big one about having to have his sticks just taped the right way. But that's a lot of them. Like, they'll start to tape their stick, and if they mess it up, they got to start completely over again.
Yep.
Can't try to fix it. It's a thing, you know? Wayne Gretzky could not get his hair cut if he was away. So if he was in a different city, he would not get his hair cut. And the reason for that is because apparently he got his hair cut one time when they were playing away and they lost. He had another superstition about not calling his mom on game nights, because the three times that he did talk to his mother, he got injured all three times.
Fair.
And after the third time was like, I cannot talk to you on game nights anymore.
That sounds like something that I would probably do, you know, if I got hurt every time I called my mom. It's like, sorry, I'm not calling you.
Right. Yeah. He was a big Diet Coke drinker, even during game. He was Diet Coke, water, and Gatorade. And then he'd throw back another Diet Coke. We're all like, these athletes are so pro. They eat so well. And Wayne's like, nope, that. I have a Diet Coke before I go play. Brendan Shanahan had to listen to Madonna, Into the Groove, before every game. I like that.
Yeah, all right. I can get down with that.
Joe Nieuwendyk's pre-meal game always had to be two pieces of toast topped with peanut butter and no jelly. And I get that, though, because I crave peanut butter at 2 o'clock in the morning consistently.
That's a solid pre-game snack, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a solid one. You get some carbs, you get the peanut butter in there, you know.
Get a little bit of sugars.
Yep.
Mine would be a loaded baked potato.
Not building yourself up for speed during the game.
If it is one thing I am not, it is speedy.
This one was a little crazy. Ray Bourque, who's a legendary NHL player, he had to change his laces before every game and between periods. So, man, I'd hate to be the person that had to take care of his skates.
And six.
Felix Potvin, he was a goalie. He had to make a cross out of tape and put it in his locker for every game.
Okay. I understand that one.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll end on this one because this one's fun. Stephen LeBeau had to chew 25 sticks of gum before the start of a game.
Yeah.
And then throw it out exactly 2 minutes before face off.
Wait, how many sticks of gum?
20 to 25.
And they were all in his mouth at one time?
Yes.
He's got that big league chew going on, dude.
Now, someone did the math for us because they figured out LeBeau had played 373 games. Which meant that he probably chewed about 7,460 sticks of gum by the end of his career.
That's a good movie.
Chewing gum. All right. Well, wish I could say let's go Flyers, but...
Let's go Flyers.
Yeah. Let's go next year, Flyers. We'll be fine next year.
Let's go Slappers.
Let's go Slappers. I want to make t-shirts now.
The Steamtown Slappers.
Steamtown Slappers. So somebody can ask me about it and I'll be like, what? You don't know who the Steamtown Slappers are? What's wrong with you? Well, thanks for listening to our special bonus episode dedicated to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just remember, stay spooky and don't die. But if you do, contact us.
Start leaving a bunch of just dead sea creatures all over the house. Spell out messages with them.